Our next speaker is Patricia Thompson Reed. Pat has worked in the Division of Diabetes Translation at CDC for over 20 years on a variety of projects. She's been the project officer for the Appalachian Diabetes Translation Project for the last 10 years. Her work with this group began with providing technical assistance and resources to communities to build capacity for implementing evidence-based practices. Through collaboration with the ARC, technical assistance and guidance from the CDC, these communities are now able to leverage their expertise to receive grants and donations from a variety of resources and sources for improving health outcomes in their communities. Pat's title for today is CDSMP, Implemented by Community-Based Coalitions in Appalachia. Please help me welcome Patricia Thompson Reed.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to our session, because I know it's early in the morning. It's also a little chilly in the Big Easy. I hoped that it was going to be warmer than Atlanta, but I think it's cold everywhere. But thank you all for coming. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my division, because I think you need to get a context from where I come. I work for the Division of Diabetes Translation. It was established in 1987. As the lead agency for translation of diabetes-related activities. And to facilitate, the purpose really was to facilitate the widespread application of diabetes-related research into clinical and public health practice. The goal of the division is to prevent the complications, disabilities, and burden associated with diabetes, and to promote health equity by reducing disparities that impact diabetes and its burden. Now, you know, Appalachia is really a good example of what the title of this meeting is, Healthography, and that place really matters in health. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about Appalachia as well. Where is Appalachia? Appalachia is geographically located along the spine of the Appalachia Mountains. It consists of 240 counties, which is a lot. And it stretches through 13 states, going from New York all the way down to Mississippi. There's only one state that's fully in Appalachia, and that is West Virginia. And another thing that you should keep in mind, too, is that most of Appalachia belongs in the diabetes belt. And this map demonstrates that. The white that you see here is all of these are the counties of Appalachia, and you see it begins in New York, and it goes all the way down to Mississippi. Now, the belt are the counties in the red, and these are the counties in the diabetes belt. Now, there are 240 counties in Appalachia, and 232 are in the diabetes belt. All right, so that is really something to keep in mind. The people living in the belt have similar risk profiles. No matter whether you're in New York and Appalachia or Mississippi and Appalachia, you have a similar risk profile. Obesity is over 30% in these areas. There are low levels of physical activity and low levels of education as well. The region has a very distinct culture, which is defined by isolation and geography. There's about 25 million people in Appalachia, and 42% of this population live in very rural and very dispersed areas. So they have little access to quality health care, and many have to drive over 30 miles just to see a physician. There are no CDEs in Appalachia, in all of Appalachia. There are some CDEs in West Virginia and some other counties. But the ones that we are working in, which are considered the distressed counties, there are no CDEs located there. In Appalachia, we have higher rates of serious disease, mortality, and disability than in non-Appalachian population. And in a sense, you know, Appalachia exists in several of those states, but you have non-Appalachian counties as well. So what I'm saying here is that even within the same state, if you live in an Appalachian county, you have greater risk and you have higher rates of serious disease than in the non-Appalachian parts of the state. There is also a lack of physical infrastructure in some of the counties, especially in the distressed counties, which is where we focus our attention. There is very little broadband in some of them. Some don't even have cell phone service. When I visited for my site visit, my family was wondering what happened to me because I never called them, I never responded to them, but I never got their calls. But sometimes there's no cell phone service. And in some areas, there's not adequate water or sewage to support sustained growth. So this is just an idea of the kinds of areas that we're dealing with. But it's a very diverse area, as I said. Some parts of Appalachia are in metropolitan areas, but 42% of that population lives in rural areas. CDC concentrates its efforts in the distressed counties. Now, ARC is our main partner, and the ARC is the Appalachian Regional Commission, which was established in 1965 to improve the economic conditions in Appalachia. The distress, they have an index, and each county is put into a certain category based on their economic conditions. You have the distressed counties, you have the at-risk counties, you have the competitive counties and the attainment counties. We are focusing our efforts in the counties with the greatest needs, and these are the distressed counties. They are the poorest 10% nationwide. The county prevalence of diabetes is approximately 13% in these counties, and among persons aged 45 to 64, it could be as much as 20%. Residents in the distressed Appalachian counties are significantly at greater risk for diabetes than in non-Appalachian counties in the ARC states, with an odds ratio of 1.4. So the Appalachian Diabetes Control and Translation Project is a project that CDC has started in the distressed counties, only the distressed counties in Appalachia. And the purpose of this project is to reduce the burden of diabetes. And we collaborate with CDC and Marshall University, which is located in West Virginia. Now, the staff who works on the ground are hired by Marshall University, but they're also from Appalachia. Because one of the things about Appalachian people, they are not that excited about outsiders coming in there and telling them what to do. They basically make up their own minds about what they want to do. But they do value the information and the education. But once you give that to them, they make their own decisions about what they want to do. So one of the things that we do is that we provide the evidence-based intervention. We provide the data about the risk for diabetes. So we bring that information to them through the Marshall University staff, and this is provided to the communities. One of the other objectives of the project is to identify and convene strategic partners for the implementation of prevention activities in Appalachia. CDC uses a two-pronged approach. We do secondary prevention. We also do primary prevention. But we have to first develop the infrastructure in order to implement these interventions. We also measure our success through the promotion and use of performance measures for monitoring and evaluating coalition activities. Again, the coalitions are focused on diabetes in distressed counties. We try to build community capacity and mobilize groups for social change. And we do this through using the Diabetes Today course. Now, community leaders, it's really important to understand the role that community leaders play in this region. They help to increase the risk of community members of about diabetes. They also promote healthy behaviors, and they advocate for changes in the built environment to support healthy behaviors. We have 75 coalitions in states. There are two in Pennsylvania, four in Ohio, eight in Mississippi, 13 in West Virginia, 4 in Virginia, 4 in Alabama, 3 in North Carolina, 11 in Tennessee, and 1 in Georgia. All coalitions apply for a $5,000 to $10,000 grant through an RFA that's put out by the ARC. The coalitions who receive the grant then go through the Diabetes Today course, and this is the framework for the course. They learn the competencies that are related to defining and evolving their communities, assessing their community, selecting their intended audience, prioritizing interventions which are evidence-based, planning an intervention, and evaluating an intervention. At the end of the course, they have an action plan which they implement over the time that the project is is implemented. The partners in this project include Bristol Myers Squibb, local health departments, primary care centers, federal qualified health centers, county extension offices, town councils, community colleges, Feeding America, the Harvard Law School, because they're concerned about food policy in these areas, local hospitals, and the American Heart Association. Now, the Chronic Disease Self-Management Program, I think Aki has told us something about that before. It's really developed to, the purpose of that program is really to help people with chronic diseases manage their disease better. It builds self-efficacy. Sometimes I don't pronounce that right. And it helps them to communicate better to their families and to the people who they work with every day. It's an evidence-based model that was developed by Stanford University based on a randomized controlled study of community-based self-management programs for persons with chronic illness. Another thing I wanted to tell you, too, is that these coalitions, although we fund them with a $5,000 to $10,000 grant, it's a one-time grant. They select their evidence-based practice. We don't tell them what to do. But many of them, because there are no services in their communities, have selected the CDSMP program. The workshops are facilitated by two trained leaders. The master trainer comes from Marshall University, and he goes to the communities and he does the training for them. At least one or both of the trainers have to be a person with a chronic disease. And all the participants have one or more than one chronic disease. The program is designed to enhance skills to manage health, but it does not compete with any other existing programs, treatment programs. It is a 2.5 hour per week program that lasts over 6 weeks in community settings such as schools, senior centers, libraries, and churches. Now, some of the results, I'm just giving you the results from January to June of 2014. From January to June of 2014, there are 13 new CDSMP leaders trained in the region, which means that they can now provide the courses to their communities. Between January and June of 2014, there are 15 new counties with CDSMP sites, which means that people can now access the service in those areas. From January to June of 2014, 90 participants, or 86% of people who participated in the CDSMP course completed the course. These are very high completion rates, and one of the reasons why we find this is happening is that it's provided by local persons. They know each other, they can support each other, and social support is really important for the completion of a 6-week course that requires a 2.5 hour commitment. So this is very, very good. Last year, over 8,000 people participated in sustained walking programs. A lot of people don't do a lot of walking in Appalachia, even though there is a lot of space there, because there are no places to walk. And so what many of the coalitions have done is that they have advocated for the development of walking trails, because this place is beautiful. It's actually a beautiful country. And they now have markings, and they have marked the walking trails, and they've also developed trails around schools, around churches. I actually visited one site, and they walk around the church, and they mark off a mile. So when people come to the church, this is what they do at the church. Or they also improve the situation around the schools and in playgrounds so that it's safe. So there's been a lot of activity outside of the CDSMP program to provide opportunities for people to practice healthy behaviors. One of the things that we've seen is through between January and June of 2014, there were 6,693 participants in the walking programs, which means that unless there's some disaster or something, between now and December, we hope to get at least 12,000 people walking in Appalachia. Now, one of the things that I found, which is very interesting about the Appalachian group, is that they're able to leverage their resources to get additional resources. They were able to put their monies and their talents together and to write a proposal, and they received a $3 million grant from the Bristol-Myers Squibb Foundation. They were then able to provide additional resources to their coalitions, and they became more enhanced coalitions. One of the things that they did, they linked the coalition to clinical settings, the community clinical partnerships that we're all trying to do in our health settings. And this is a result from one of the clinics, the coalition clinic partnerships with the CHW. They followed 73 patients over a year, and 77% of them experienced a decrease in their hemoglobin A1C by 1%, which is clinically significant and important for preventing the complications of diabetes. And one of the things you also find in Appalachia is that people have very high hemoglobin A1Cs because they don't have good control. But what we've seen is that there's been an average of 4.4 reduction in the hemoglobin A1C over a year. And this is excellent results. Another preliminary data from another enhanced coalition is in Georgia, the one coalition we have in Georgia. Using a clinic-based team, which included CHW trained with CDSMP and DSMP, to case manage 84 people with diabetes in 2013, none of them were hospitalized. So these results are really phenomenal. Sustainability, again, these coalitions are volunteers. These coalition members are volunteers. They are not paid. Outside funding does not drive their sustainability. They get a one-time funding, and many of these coalitions have been in existence now for 10 years, over 10 years. Coalition members have shared values and interests in improving the health of community members, and I think this is why they are sustaining their coalitions over time, whether or not they receive funding from ARC or CDC or BMS. They're able to sustain their coalitions. Courses are being taught locally, and the leaders also advocate for environmental supports, policies, and physical changes to the environment so people can actually engage in healthier behaviors. Some of these behaviors include working with work sites. There are lots of competitions among different companies, and they walk to Disney World, and they walk to different places based on the creative things that they make up for a building competition. The future, we want to continue our efforts to establish more coalitions in this area and to promote community clinical linkages. But of course, when we do that, we want to pay the coalition workers because this provides employment, and we also need to collect the data. And we need more resources for that. We want to collect trend data to show changes in behavioral and physical health outcomes in the intended population, and we need resources to expand the reach and to scale up community-based self-management activities. We also would like to see the use of more technology in Appalachia, because then that would overcome some of the geographical barriers that we have there. An internet delivery program would be wonderful for CDSMP. Cell phone interventions where we could have reminders. And again, developing local leaders to drive this change. Because these are infrastructure changes. And these are policies and allocations of resources that are needed in order to to build the technology that's needed to deliver these services.
Thank you. Thank you, Pat.